Matter of the estate of Brandon Narlefsky versus Nicholas Gomes. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon, Justices. Russell Macnow, MACNOW, appearing on behalf of the petitioner.
Good afternoon, Justices. Jeffrey Jacobson, Fagery, Drinker, Biddle, and Reif, on behalf of AMICI, the New Jersey Civil Justice Institute, and the American Property and Casualty Insurance Association.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Mark Sirocco from the law offices of Robert A. Sirocco on behalf of the respondent, Amboy Food, Liquor, and News, Inc.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Macnow, please go ahead.
Justices, I hope this argument finds you, the court staff, and counsel well and safe. So how do we get here? We're dealing with a very unfortunate situation in which a 19-year-old young man lost his life on November 9th, 2014. We know a few other very salient facts. One, that the decedent himself, Brandon Narlefsky, went into cross-petitioner Amboy liquor store, purchased alcohol for him and a couple of other buddies. We know that Amboy Liquors, the clerk there did not ask for identification. So we know that the alcohol was purchased unlawfully underage by Mr. Narlefsky and sold unlawfully to him by Amboy Liquors. We know that ultimately, after going back to these Rosinski residents and having some alcohol, an accident ensued involving Gomes as the driver and Narlefsky as the passenger. We know that Gomes ultimately pled guilty to driving under the influence and aggravated vehicular homicide for resulting in the death of Mr. Narlefsky. So ultimately, we get to a point where the estate sues the operator of the vehicle, Gomes. It sues the server of the alcohol, the licensed entity, Amboy Liquors. It does not sue the homeowner or the social host, if you will, Swierczynski. Instead, Amboy Liquors opts to file a third-party complaint. Underlying case settles, and we're left with a very interesting legal issue, which the appellate division has kind of thrust upon us as something that needs to be resolved either by this court or the legislature or both perhaps. And so what did the appellate division do? The appellate division looked at this issue, again, a fairly narrow issue of whether an underage adult who has a bunch of guys over or a bunch of friends over to his house but doesn't provide alcohol can be held liable in an ensuing motor vehicle accident or for ensuing injuries to anyone, as the case may be. And what the appellate division did is they initially looked at statutes, the relevant statutes that could come into play here. And they initially looked at the social host liability law and quickly dismissed that as applicable, and clearly it is not. It only applies to adults 21 and older, and it must involve injury to a third party, which neither of those criteria apply here. It looked at NJSA 2C33-17, which is the penal statute for provision of alcohol to minors, and it found that was not applicable here as well to Mark Swierczynski, because the alcohol was actually purchased by the decedent Narlefsky. There was no evidence that Mark Swierczynski made any other alcohol available, and there was no evidence that Mark owned, leased, or managed the house in which the alcohol was consumed. It then goes on to talk, the appellate division then goes on to talk about two cases. Thomas versus Romice, 234 NJ Super 364, which was an interesting choice of cases to examine because, as I indicated in my petition, that case seems to refute the ultimate holding or stand in derogation of the ultimate holding by the appellate division. The issue in that case, as framed by Judge Keefe, was whether the trial judge erred when he instructed the jury that a social host is not liable for the negligent acts of his minor guest who becomes intoxicated and causes injury to a third person unless the jury finds that the social host provided alcoholic beverages to the minor after visible intoxication. And in that case, which is factually a bit different than this one, the social host was 20 years old, so therefore of an adult but underage. But the injured party and the driver of the vehicle in which the injured party was a passenger were both 17-year-old minors. In that case, the source of the alcohol was also disputed. The plaintiff argued in that case that the defendant had a duty to abstain from serving alcohol to 17-year-olds and breached that duty with the first drink served, in essence establishing something akin to what the appellate division wants to do in this case, which was to impose strict liability on that underage adult social host. The plaintiff acknowledged that there was no case law supporting that argument, and they also argued that it would be such a determination would be the next logical step in state policy against underage alcohol consumption. The court ultimately held that an adult acting under the age of 21, acting as a social host, had a limited duty to a minor under the age of 18 to not serve alcohol only if that person was visibly intoxicated. Something akin to the social host liability statute, but involving an underage adult social host serving to somebody under the legal age of 18. So pretty drastic difference between that case and this case, and a holding very inconsistent with the appellate division holding in this case. One other thing in that appellate division holding that was of note. So 2C33-17 was not in effect at the time. It was enacted, I guess, during the pendency of that case. But the appellate division, Judge Keefe in that case, noted something interesting at page 374. Quote, no such intent can be found in this legislation, meaning 2C33-17, to justify using the conduct it prescribes as a tort standard. So even though the statute wasn't in place at the time, Judge Keefe did look at it. The appellate division panel did look at it and concluded that it did not establish a tort standard. The second case that the appellate division looked at in this case was Morella versus Mathieu, 235.
Before you leave, Thomas,
yes.
Isn't there an argument that you know, the social host statute requires the visible intoxication because it's legal to serve an adult alcohol, for one adult to serve an adult alcohol. But as soon as you get into serving juveniles, whether or not they are visibly intoxicated, you have done something that is not legal. So Thomas may have been too restrictive in its imposition of liability. Why am I wrong about that?
So, Justice Patterson, so there are cases in our jurisprudence that stand for the proposition, and again, probably not cited here because it's not really on point, but when we're talking about juveniles, those under the age of 18, there are cases that impose the potential for liability on service of alcohol to minors. Again, we're not dealing with that here. My only point in Thomas was that the appellate division cited that as a supporting case when in fact it was not.
But you're dealing here with the service of alcohol to people who are not legally of age to have alcohol. They may be legally right. Adults, for they can vote, they can do a lot of things, but they are not entitled to walk into a liquor store and legally buy alcohol. So that's a bit of a distinction.
Yeah, I agreed. But it again, in not only in New Jersey, but in other jurisdictions, it seems a distinction has been made between service of alcohol to minors being those under the age of 18 and those who are considered to be adults.
But counsel, doesn't
make that distinction, but in this, I'm sorry.
Mr. McNeil, I'm sorry. Relating to Justice Patterson's question, doesn't the Dram Shop Liability Act, although it is illegal to serve minors, impose a different duty on the dram shop provider that they should have known he was a minor either by carding or by some other indicia? Otherwise, there's no civil liability. Isn't that basically what the dram shop statute says?
It does, Justice Fernandez-Vini. It does say that.
So that makes it a little different.
It does make a difference. Justice Patterson, again, getting back to what the point I was trying to make with Thomas is, even in a factual situation different than we're dealing with here today, which is, in that case, they were actually minors under the age of 18, Justice Keefe actually imposed that social host distinction or that social host liability that we now see in the current social host liability law, that requiring service when visibly intoxicated. Again, I'm not sure that we're there now with this case. It's a different case because of the ages.
Is there any dispute in the record whether Norleski was visibly intoxicated when he left Mark's residence?
So the testimony from Mark Swazinski was he said he didn't believe either Gomes or Norleski were visibly intoxicated when they left. I'm not sure there was any other testimony to that effect one way or the other, But that was that testimony is in the record.
What was the Narlesky's BAC? Do you remember?
I want to say 0.18, maybe 0.186, something in that range. I see Mr. Scirocco shaking his head, so I may be off on that, and maybe he has a better recollection than I do. In any case, he was definitely over
at
the...
At which point was the 0.18, Counsel? Counsel, at which point was the 0.18? Do we know from the record? Was it when he left the premises?
Whatever the blood alcohol, there was definitely a blood draw. Yeah, there was a blood draw.
If you extrapolated backwards, it would probably be higher, correct?
Not necessarily, Counsel.
Yeah, I believe that there was a warrant obtained for blood draw, and so whatever that time frame was, the time lag between the warrant and actually obtaining the blood, there would have been that time lag.
If you review the Widmark studies, the indication of whether it's on its way up or its way down depends on when the last drink was had vis-a-vis when the test was taken. So the fact that at the time it was done necessarily mean it would be going higher. It could have been lower and going up as opposed to the other way.
Yeah, which raises another interesting point that really hasn't come up much in the record, but was argued, at least in the lower court by me. Amboy Liquor's toxicology expert opined that Gomes didn't have any alcohol at this Rosinski residence. So it's kind of a contradictory argument. I mean, on the one hand, they're experts saying that he didn't have any alcohol at this Rosinski residence, but we're only here if he had alcohol at this Rosinski residence. So, and again, whether the expert ultimately would testify or not, I guess we'll have to wait another day. But there is some interesting testimony, or at least a report that says that Gomes didn't actually even consume alcohol at Swierczynski's house. So, and there is evidence that he...
Yeah. Assuming for the sake of argument, just for this question, that the Thomas standard, Judge Keefe's standard, the visibly intoxicated standard, applied at the time that these young men were at Mark's residence. Okay, he permitted everyone in there, and he permitted, even if he wasn't serving the drinks, he permitted those drinks to be served around. Why shouldn't your client be subject to potential liability for allowing the premises that he controlled at that moment, for allowing these young men be using his premises to drink and possibly get intoxicated and go on the road and cause potential carnage?
Yeah, so as an initial matter, as I just indicated, there was no evidence that he was visibly intoxicated. So even if that was the standard, even if there was, we were going to go down that road and kind of make the house where everybody goes back to responsible, there's no evidence in this particular case. But I would argue, Justice Albin, that that's not the standard here in New Jersey. It's a quantum leap from where we are, both legislatively and in terms of our common law. It's not really been well received in other jurisdictions, as I noted in my petition. There are, I believe, six states that have codified this type of liability. There's two states that make it a negligence per se based on their criminal statutes. And there's one state with Tennessee that kind of adopted it in their common law, although that case involved, again, minors, people under the age of 18. So it's not a direction where a lot of states or other jurisdictions have gone, and certainly not one where this state has even come close to going in.
Well, we were first in the nation in Kelly. So take juveniles out of the picture for a second. Someone, a social host, invites people over, bring your own wine, bring your own beer, bring your own liquor, does not serve anyone any alcohol, and people get plastered there and go on the road and kill someone. Liability?
If people are bringing their own alcohol?
Yeah.
If people are bringing their own alcohol, look, I'm from a school where people have to assume responsibility for their own actions. But the impetus behind the social host liability law is to discourage adults from serving other adults alcohol while they're visibly intoxicated. If somebody comes over to somebody else's house and brings their own alcohol, regardless of whether they're of age or not, and they opt to consume alcohol, they assume responsibility for their actions when they opt to drive intoxicated down after that, at that point. There is recourse. Again, we're talking about policy arguments. There is recourse to the victim. They have recourse against the operator of the vehicle. They have recourse potentially against whoever sold the alcohol to, again, if they're underage. There is recourse, as there was in this case. But in a case where somebody is just providing the location for people to bring their own alcohol and drink and doesn't actively participate or in any way become involved in the service of the alcohol, that is a big leap. And again, one of the policy arguments, certainly as a parent, that would come to mind to me is if, and again, children, I'm saying young adults in that 18 to 21 year old range are going to do this anyway. We all know that. There's nothing we're going to do to change that. They're going to get alcohol. They're going to drink alcohol. It's just a question where they go to drink it.
So I just want to understand. I want to understand your argument. You're saying, let's take a 20-year-old now inviting his or her friends over and saying, bring as much alcohol as you want. Mm-hmm. And these young people get drunk, go on the roadway, and kill people. You're saying that there is no public policy that should emanate from the common law for us to discourage that type of conduct?
Yeah, I don't see it in the common law. So I see legislative enactments that suggest that that may be a way that state wants to go, but I don't see anything in the common law, and certainly in this state and really even in any other state. I mean, I looked at that Massachusetts case and they said just the opposite. The Massachusetts Supreme Court case in Juliana versus Simpson. No, I don't see anything in the common law that says that.
So we were in Kelly versus Quinnell. We were the first in the country. The hypothetical that I have given you is really just a very short step from Kelly. No, from serving the drink to inviting people over, bringing their drinks, and watching them get drunk.
But Justice Albin, even in Kelly, and as I've read it over a few times before this argument, this court limited its holding to the very narrow set of facts in that case. And it specifically shied away from going down other roads. The court in that case, even in that opinion, page 556, we are not faced with a party where many guests congregate, nor with guests serving each other, nor with a host busily occupied with other responsibilities, and therefore unable to attend to the matter of serving liquor, nor with a drunken host. We will face those situations when and if they come before us, we hope with sufficient reason and perception so as to balance, if necessary and if legitimate, the societal interests alleged to be inconsistent with the public policy considerations that are at the heart of today's decision. So even in Kelly, the court was loath to go down the multitude of roads that it could have gone down in setting forth a broad-based public policy, and really had the rug pulled out from them on the court anyway by the enactment of the social host liability law, which, although it's engendered some litigation in terms of its interpretation, has not engendered that the factual scenarios that are contemplated in Kelly.
Counsel, what was the purpose of the Social Host Liability Act enacted by the legislature? Do you know from the
Social Host Liability Law is to impose some responsibility on adults for serving other adults to...
Wasn't it in part the legislative history indicated that there was to limit the scope of Kelly versus Quinnell?
Oh, it definitely was enacted specifically in response to Kelly.
In response to our opinion?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, that's in the legislative history.
So, Mr. McNabb, with respect to Section 17A, is there any proof that Mark owned, leased, or managed the home?
No, he wasn't. It was owned by his parents, one of whom was estranged, not living at the house.
Counsel, I'll finish your answer. Sorry.
No, Mark Rosinski was living there, like any young adult child may live in their parents' home.
The appellate division announced the duty and applied it prospectively only. If this court finds a duty, why wouldn't it apply in this case as well? Typically, the party that carries the water and gets the result is entitled to benefit from it. Why not here?
Yeah, and, you know, typically that case is one in which the plaintiff is actually going to benefit. That's not what we have here. I think that would be a good argument if the estate opted to sue Zwierzynski and Appraise. But that's not what happened here. There's no really upside for Amboy Liquors other than potentially offset some of their settlement funds. I mean, one of the other criteria for retroactive application is a logical extension of existing case law. For me, I would argue that any case that gets to the Supreme Court suggests that it's not a logical extension. Otherwise, it wouldn't have gotten here in the first place.
Forget about whether it's retroactive or prospective. Doesn't the party that carries the water usually get the benefit of the ruling?
It depends on whether there's an upside or an incentive for them to get the benefit. I mean,
but there is a benefit to Amboy if they were to win this issue on duty, and that is they would be able to pursue a third-party claim against your client.
Correct.
And they would be potentially able to offset what they've spent on this case. So they're not the plaintiff for sure, but they have a benefit. They would have a benefit. And they have pursued the claim.
Yeah, I can't dispute that, Justice Patterson. My point is, though, that in the past, in addition to the carrying the water, that there has to be, I mean, the intent of social host liability law and dram shop law is to provide a pot of money to victims of illegally served alcohol or alcohol served under circumstances in which the person is visibly intoxicated and caused injury to a third party. That's not going to happen here. You know, that this plaintiff is never going to see any of the money that potentially could be recovered by Amboy Liquor should this matter be remanded and tried and ultimately with a favorable disposition.
But one of the points of letting the person who carried the water benefit from the case is to give that party an incentive to bring the case in the first place. And that's what we said in Kelly versus Quinnell, which completely broke from all law in the country. We still gave the plaintiff who brought that claim, as unlikely as it may have seemed to be potentially successful, we gave that party the benefit. Well, like, why wouldn't we do it here?
Because in Kelly, the plaintiff was the victim. Here, the victim is the estate of Norleski. The estate of Norleski is not a party to this appeal. So, yeah, all you're doing by allowing this not to be applied retroactively or to be applied prospectively is to allow Amboy the ability to go and, even though it broke the law when it served this young man alcohol underage, it's going to give them recourse against somebody who did not break the law, at least he wasn't charged with violation of any penal code, to have a two-week trial to try to impose some liability on him for having a few guys over to have some alcohol. That's what's going to happen. So I'm not sure that there's any why they need to be incentivized. They're looking to offset their liability. They're not looking to be made whole or to be compensated for a loss. They were wrong. They did something wrong. That's why they settled the case. Their clerk served an underage young man without identifying him. So to me, it would be more of a reward to a wrongdoer than giving them just due for carrying the water, so to speak.
Anything else you'd like to add at this point?
No, Chief Justice. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. At the time of Kelly, this Court did not have any legislative guidance, and so it adopted the rule that it adopted. That's not the situation we have today. The Court has before it the disorderly person statute that we've been discussing in Mr. McNow's argument, and that statute uses very specific words. It talks in terms of offering, serving, or making alcohol available. What the appellate division did in this case is they held first that Mark did not engage in any of those activities. He didn't offer, he didn't serve, he didn't make available. They imposed a prospective duty to, in their words, desist from facilitating the drinking of alcohol. Justice Albin, a few moments ago, you used the term, I believe, permitted the service of alcohol. That's very different. That's beyond even the judicial tinkering that this Court refused to do in the Mazzucano case. That's a wholesale rewriting of the statute to extend liability very much further than the legislature did. There may be very good policy reasons to do that. I really don't have a position as to where I would vote on that if I were a legislator. But that's not where the court should be at this point, the legislature having spoken. Justice Napone, you spoke a few moments ago about sections, you said 17A, I think you meant 17B of the statute, which used the specific words owned, leased, or managed. And the record is very clear that, Mark did not own, lease, or manage these premises. And so again, perhaps there's a loophole here that the legislature could address. Justice Alvin, you used the term, I believe you said controlled at that moment, because neither of the owners were home at the time. But again, the legislature didn't use the word control. They used the words owned, leased, or managed.
But so, I know you're talking about the social host liability law, which doesn't really address this type of scenario. And when we do so, assuming that the common law has a place here, through the common law, courts are expressing public policy, okay, through a standard like Hopkins, just the way it was done in Kelly. The court enunciated a public policy. So why in the unique circumstances here that seem to be outside the range of the social host liability, should the court not speak?
So Justice Alvin, first of all, I think the social host liability statute, the Dram Shop Act, is far from this, because there's no question, and the appellate division dealt with this succinctly and correctly. There's no way Mark Swierczynski could have been a social host, because the social host liability statute only applies to the legal service of alcohol, which this is not. So this is in the world of the disorderly person statute. And there, the legislature, again, very specifically limited this to offer, serve, or make available. So what the court would have to do here in order to apply liability either to the parties in this case or prospectively is to say that we are going to, notwithstanding that the legislature in the disorderly person statute dealt only with offer, serve, or make available, we're going to go further than that, and we're going to use the word facilitate, or we're going to use the word permit. And that's, as Mr. Macnow said, that is quite a policy determination. It's one that very few states
Well, Mr. Jacobson, can there be civil liability that isn't covered by the DP statute? I mean,
I suppose
that
happens,
in many contexts. There is conduct that constitutes a tort that does not violate any criminal statute, right?
Justice Patterson, I agree with that. But what since this court's decision in Rappaport, which was in 1984, both of those decisions came against a blank legislative slate. There was nothing. All of the court's decisions since then have been closely tied to the statute. And so, for example, in the Mazzucano case, which was a decision written by Justice Alvin, that was one where the parties were trying to impose a duty to monitor the service of basically the self-service of alcohol. And Justice Alvin, you wrote that that would be judicial tinkering beyond the words of the statute. And I think if that was judicial tinkering, this is wholesale throwing out of the statute.
If I remember that correctly, that fell within the Dram Shop Act.
And, correct.
Turning to a point that Justice Patterson just made, many states recognized negligent homicide as a crime. We don't. Okay, we only recognize vehicular homicide as reckless, and yet wrongful death suits are brought under the negligence standard all the time, and we don't feel bound by that criminal statute. So why would we feel bound by the DP statute when we're dealing with the common law and policy that emanates from the common law?
I suppose, Justice Alvin, because the legislature has had a chance to respond to this court's decisions in that area and hasn't done, whereas here there is the disorderly person statute. It defined the scope of liability in a particular way, and it didn't extend all the way to facilitating. I mean, there are very significant policy questions tied up in the issue of whether one underage adult should be responsible for other underage adults drinking in his or her presence. And there are, as I say, there could be a very robust policy discussion about whether that is a wise or an unwise rule.
And indeed, Mr. Jacobson, isn't that some of the concerns that were expressed by the Massachusetts court in deciding not to go in that direction? I wanted to make that point. I tried to. Unfortunately, I was on mute, Mr. McNaught, when you were ending your argument, so I didn't get to ask you about that. But it seems to me, under the approach that's being discussed, I don't know where the practical limits end. And yet, if we look at the DUI statute and we look at the social host liability statute, as you're urging us to do, I see a symmetry in the legislative choice in how to approach this problem. Both of them go to the heart of what would control the risk, which is the spigot over the making available of alcohol to someone who is who shouldn't get it or is visibly intoxicated, not simply being present and not stopping someone from doing an action that perhaps they should not or that is indeed a disorderly person's offense to imbibe.
But Justice Levecchi, I would make 2 points. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Were you finished with the question?
No, I guess what I'm trying to say is I am concerned about the discussion about expansion of the common law in a direction that goes, in my view, somewhat afield from where the legislature seems to have created the boundaries for imposing liability. And there are practical reasons for the legislature to have adopted them. And in fact, they're the ones that we adopted in Kelly. We look to the actual service itself and not to being a bystander or not interfering in the actions of another that would somehow make one responsible for another's actions. When I read your brief, I thought that was the point that you were emphasizing, not just there's legislation here, but there's legislation that gives us strong guidelines as to where the legislative policy is going.
That's correct, Justice Levecchi. The reason why I didn't go any further in that direction is because I didn't want to engage in the very policy discussion that I'm suggesting the court should not engage in itself. But I would make 2 points. The first is, and Your Honor quoted exactly the language from Kelly that I had in mind, which is liability proceeds from the duty of care that accompanies control of the liquor supply, which is the line that this court drew in that case. The other I would make is that the brief in response to mine cited a Pennsylvania case from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, Capris against Heller. And there, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court looked at the legislature having made the distinction between adults who are old enough to handle alcohol legally and adults who are not. That because we don't entrust 18, 19, and 20-year-olds with the responsibility to control the liquor supply, so to speak, we don't hold them responsible in the same manner. So again, here, the legislature, having adopted the disorderly person statute and drawn the line the place that it did, I think that if there is a policy discussion to be had here about the direction where to go, it should be in the legislature and not in this court.
Do you accept the Romay case that was written by Judge Keefe in 1989?
So, Justice Albin, I think that court actually reached the right result for the wrong reason. That court assumed that the underage adults in that case were social hosts. And I don't think they were. I think that the social host statute should not have applied in Thomas at all. So the court ended up deciding that there was no liability there for other reasons, because they didn't match the definition of liability for social hosts. But I think that case actually got it wrong, because it proceeded from the assumption that underage adults were social hosts under that statute, which they really weren't, which is what the appellate division held in this case.
Well, Mr. Jacobson, if we were to think that there's a step to be taken in this area at all, and we were to impose under the common law some social host liability for an underage drinker, wouldn't it make sense to impose the same standard of conduct that we apply for adults, which is simply that they have to not serve visibly intoxicated individuals? That's more of a cautious step in the development of the law than the broader duty that the appellate division has urged in this appellate division decision.
I agree, Justice Leavecchia, that it's more cautious, but I want to go back to the point that Justice Fernandez-Vina raised at the beginning or the middle of Mr. McNow's argument, which is that the dram shop statute was adopted in response to the decision in Kelly. So it was not as far as Kelly. So what you just described, Justice Leavecchia, would be reaffirming Kelly and applying it to underage adults in a way that the legislature decided not to do. So although I agree that that's a step less far than the appellate division went, I would argue that it's still a step too far, given that it's not what the legislature decided to do.
I'm just confused about that, because the social host liability statute applies to adults serving other adults, but imposes liability for service on visibly intoxicated persons. If that duty were to be imposed even on an underage adult serving another underage adult, that's the step that I'm talking about. And I do not think the Dram Shop Act necessarily precludes that.
Except, Justice Leavecchia, the definition of social host in 2A15.5.5 requires that the provision of alcohol have been legal. And so a 20-year-old cannot legally provide alcohol to anybody. And so what you would be doing in that circumstance, Justice Leavecchia, is you would be redefining social host. That's what that's the question Justice Albin was essentially asking me a moment ago.
Justice Albin's question was more simply standing by and letting the minor drink him or herself, the other underage minor, into a state of inebriation and not stop it. I'm talking about more affirmative action on the part of the underage adult.
I was asking about the Romay case, which has affirmative action. In that particular case, a 20-year-old served two 17-year-olds.
And those are minors.
Judge Keefe found that there would be liability provided that the 20-year-old saw the two 17-year-olds as visibly intoxicated under those circumstances.
Sorry.
Correct?
Please.
Am I right about that?
You're correct in that in what the Thomas case held, and as a policy matter, I may or may not agree with that. Unfortunately, the definition of social host, however, requires the social host to provide alcohol legally, which the 20-year-old in the Thomas case could not have done. So I think that
why the legislature obviously Kelly dealt with adults serving adults. The social host statute clearly deals with adults serving adults. Do we know why the legislature has never addressed the question of, now that we obviously have adults at 18, but 21 is the drinking age, has never addressed people in that gap where they are adults for a number of different areas of responsibility, including tort liability, but not adults for purposes of being able to go and legally buy alcohol?
I'm not aware of the reason why the definition of social host was framed as it was, Justice Patterson. I tend to agree with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's decision that perhaps it's because we don't entrust 18, 19, and 20-year-olds with the ability to drink, and so therefore we're not going to entrust them with the responsibility beyond what the disorderly person statute says, which is don't offer, don't serve, don't make available. We're not going to impose liability on them as social hosts. That's a guess, and I can't say that I'm right or I'm wrong about it.
Thank you.
Tell me if I'm mistaken. The social host liability talks about adults serving adults, correct?
Correct. Or adults serving minors, but correct.
Okay.
In limited.
It's just because the case law has been very clear, Justice Albin, that if an adult serves a minor, that's the disorderly person statute. So I apologize.
Well,
I answered.
No, I'm talking about the social host liability statute.
Is it
limited to
adults?
Okay.
Yes.
So we know that 1976, the Lynn statute, the Lynn case, dealt with an adult serving a minor, correct? You're familiar
correct.
With that case?
Correct. Yes.
You're not suggesting that the social host liability statute, even though it was talking about adults serving adults, was intended to extinguish the holding in Lynn? You're not suggesting that, are you?
I might be, Justice Albin, and the reason why is that I think all parties have assumed that if a person's conduct violates the disorderly person statute, there can be liability flowing therefrom, whether that meets the social host definition or not. So I agree with you.
Lynn was decided well before that DP statute. Are you suggesting that when the legislature passed the disorderly person statute, it was intending to repeal Lynn?
Lynn was an appellate division case, not a Supreme Court case. When this court adopted the holding of Lynn in the Rappaport case, it was a more limited holding. And then shortly after the Rappaport case, the disorderly person statute became effective. So I can't speak to why the disorderly person statute became effective in the way that why it was drafted the way that it was. But Lynn was the law from 1976 to 1984. This court picked up on it in 1984. The legislature then adopted the disorderly person statute in 1985. So all I'm really suggesting, Justice Alvin, is that this court ought to restrict itself to the text of the disorderly person statute when thinking about the liability of an underage adult for offering, serving, or making available. That if the underage adult did not offer, serve, or make available, then he's not a social host, he's not a disorderly person.
You want us to overthrow Thomas too? You want us to vacate Thomas?
No, because Thomas, Your Honor, Thomas didn't find liability.
Forget the reasoning of Thomas. You want us to vacate that?
I think that if this court affirms the appellate division's decision that Mark Z was not a social host, that implicitly demonstrates that Thomas was wrong, because Thomas would have assumed that he was a social host. But again, it doesn't really matter, because if he wasn't serving, then the social host statute doesn't apply either. So if he was serving, he's violated the disorderly person statute. Whether he's a social host, whether that he's a social host then becomes another question. So my point is, he wasn't serving. He was, at best, as the appellate division put it, facilitating, or as Your Honor put it, permitting. And that's not a violation of the social host statute or of the disorderly person statute. So again,
where do we find legislative intent that there cannot be liability imposed in any setting that is not covered by either the social host statute or the DP statute?
Well, first of all, the social host statute calls itself the exclusive civil remedy. So now again,
we're not here. We're not here on a case, would impose a liability on an adult-to-adult service situation that's beyond. The legislature has said loud and clear there's no liability otherwise. But how about these scenarios such as the one we have here that are not covered by either statute?
I think the only answer I can give you, Justice Patterson, is that both times that this court spoke in 1959 and 1984, it said it was speaking because it didn't have legislative guidance. And there's no question that the court in 1959 was groundbreaking. It was all the things Justice Alvin described, but it acted the way that it did because it didn't have legislative guidance. And since it's had legislative guidance, this court
going
has...
beyond, are you saying the legislature has preempted this area? Is that the essence of your argument?
No, Chief Justice, I'm not. I wouldn't go so far as to say preempted. What I would go so far as to say is that they have spoken. They've given the court guidance in a way that they haven't done before, and so it's no longer appropriate for the court to push the legislature in a particular direction, to usurp the legislature's function. The legislature has demonstrated that it knows it. It maybe didn't before 1959, but the legislature has demonstrated now that it has this issue in hand. It can respond to developments. For the court to strike out in a policy direction where the legislature has not in this circumstance would be a leap that it has not taken before in this area.
Other questions, anyone? Thank you, Mr. Jacobson.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Scirocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Mr. Chief Justice, I'd like to see if I can pick up on Your Honor's question to Mr. Jacobson, because I do take Meeke's position to be that the legislature has somehow preempted this court from addressing this issue of common law. I don't think that's quite right. And Justice Albin, I appreciate that Your Honor raised the Lynn decision, because that's what I think was missing in the colloquy with both Mr. Jacobson and Mr. Macnall. The Lynn decision, this court in Kelly described Lynn as a significant step in the development of social host liability law. Lynn versus Rand is still good law to this day. That's what Thomas versus Ramis got right. Judge Keefe, in that case, noted that it was impermissible for a social host to make alcohol, to serve alcohol to one who was visibly intoxicated. I do think, Justice LaVecchia, that the legislature speaking to this issue in the disorderly persons law is instructive in several ways. And I guess I would disagree with Mr. Jacobson that the court in Rappaport was addressing the common law dram shop case from a blank slate. If Your Honors look at pages 202 and 203 of the Rappaport opinion, actually I think it's 201 through 203, in that case, this court noted that there was a disorderly person statute as well as an administrative code section which prescribed the conduct that it was addressing. Now, it's undisputed that Rappaport was a common law decision, but what we're saying here is that when the court looks at the natural development of the social host liability law from Rappaport through Lynn versus Rand, through Kelly versus Gwinnell, and then what did the legislature do? They didn't take a look at Lynn versus Rand, again, approved in Kelly versus Gwinnell, and they didn't say, wait a second, the appellate division and the Supreme Court got it wrong there. We're going to include this behavior in the social host liability law, and we're going to define the scope of liability in the social host liability law. In fact, this court in Steele versus Kerrigan in 1997 said that this court left open the issue of common law liability when it came to serving minors. And I do, and by minors, I mean those under the age of 21. What the legislature did with the disorderly person statute, and Justice Patterson, we can look to the legislative history in that statute where there was a statement from there, and we've cited it at every level of this appeal from the trial court on up to here, that the purpose of the disorderly persons law was to discourage the consumption of those who were under the age, the consumption of alcohol by those who were under the age of 21 by placing more responsibility on adults. So far from limiting its legislative enactment to the holding in Lynn versus Rand, the legislature went further than Lynn versus Rand because they didn't hinge the disorderly person's liability on any sort of visible intoxication. Lynn versus Rand, the court will recall, that dealt with an 18-year-old. The social host made alcohol available to that person. The facts of that case were really not well developed. But the court said that if a social host furnishes alcohol to one who's under the age of 21, who's a minor for the purposes of consuming alcohol, then there can be civil liability. The legislature went further than that and said that anybody that makes offers or that makes available, serves, or offers alcohol to one who's under the age of 21 is a disorderly person. And I would like to note the social interests that were present in Kelly and the different with the ways in which they are different here. As this court knows, there was a strong dissent in Kelly versus Gwinnell by Justice Garibaldi. And one of the things that the dissent was concerned with was what the dissent called the potentially limitless implications of the duty that was announced in that case, particularly because what the court was dealing with was behavior that could otherwise be very good and that is held by many people to be valuable, consuming alcoholic beverages legally in the home safely. Now, the court ultimately disagreed, the majority disagreed with the dissent, but it took the dissent's concerns very seriously. But even Justice Garibaldi, in footnote 1 of her dissenting opinion, said that she would not have hesitated to sign on to the majority opinion and approve Lynn versus Rand if the conduct in question involved minors. My friend on the other side, Mr. Macnall, has said that we know that minors are going to do this behavior anyway. He's not saying that as a matter of public policy we want to encourage this type of behavior. Everybody admits that this type of behavior, the behavior that was engaged in by Mark Swinzerski, is an odious practice, and the public policy and the laws of this state is not to somehow limit it to take place in only safe situations, but to eliminate it altogether. What we know is what happened in this case. one young man lost his life as a result of consuming alcohol at Mark Swinzerski's home, and another one, the one who was driving the car, the 20-year-old, is spending the better part of 7 years in jail after pleading guilty to vehicular homicide. This is not a socially beneficial practice, a la the dissent's concerns in Kelly versus Rand, which the majority of this court had to balance. And that's why the opinion in Kelly versus Gwinnell was so limited. It was so circumscribed. I don't think that there's anything right now to say that Lynn versus Rand is not good law. What we're asking the court to recognize, and Justice Albin, if I can respond to some of your factual questions, the post-mortem blood alcohol concentration of Brandon Narleski was 0.143. The extrapolated back blood alcohol concentration was of Nicholas Gomes, because a warrant had to be taken to take his blood when he was at the hospital, was 0.161. Nicholas Gomes did not dispute that he was driving while he's intoxicated, and there is evidence that Brandon Narleski was visibly intoxicated. Nicholas Gomes testified to that at his deposition. He testified under oath that Brandon Narleski was slurring his words. He appeared to be visibly intoxicated when they were at the house. Mark Swinzerski was at the home in question, Nicholas Gomes was at the home in question for a period of 50 minutes, and so he would be probably a good authority to accept on this issue of the relative intoxication of Brandon Narleski. Nicholas Gomes himself testified that when he was at Mark Swinzerski's home, he drank about half a water bottle's worth of vodka. And what we're asking the court to recognize here is that by making the four walls of his bedroom in his home that he had access to, that he lived for 10 years, available for the purpose that alcohol would be consumed, Mark Swinzerski violated a duty to the injured party. I think Justice Levesque. Yes, Mr. Chief Justice.
Counsel, if we were to accept your argument and impose a duty along the lines of what you've argued and what the Appellate Division did, can you tell us, how would it be enforced on a practical level? Let's say a 19-year-old invites some fellow 19-year-olds over to his house. They go into the room. One of the guests brings two six-packs and shares it with another 19-year-old. What should happen? What does the person who lives in that home need to do?
In that case, Mr. Chief Justice, if I'm understanding the hypothetical, the person who lives in the home has knowledge of what's going on, allows it to happen. It's not clear from your hypothetical, Your Honor, whether or not the individual who lives in the home is actively participating in the conduct, which is, of course, what we have here. I don't mean to respond to Your Honor's hypothetical with a hypothetical, but to suppose that we had a case. I mean, Mr. McNaugh has accused us of creating a duty where there would be strict liability. What we're saying, Mr. Chief Justice, is that there has to be not only knowledge of what goes on in the home, there has to be, the lower court used the word facilitation. We think that that's right if one facilitates the conduct at issue. I think encourage could be another word. Substantially assist could be a word that
aren't
might be used.
Aren't you now expanding the Social Host Liability Act beyond service to knowledge that someone else in the house is serving? Aren't you expanding that completely by under the test that you suggest? Social host says you have to serve. You're now saying you don't have to serve, but if someone in the house is serving and you're aware of it, you're facilitating it, and therefore you're liable. Isn't that an expansion of the Social Host Liability Act?
With respect, Justice Fernandez-Vina, no, that's not. In Dower versus Gamba, the appellate division, in an opinion by Judge Chabelle, certification was denied by this court in that case. That interpreted the very issue that Your Honor is asking about. There was a party at the Gamba brothers' home. It was not clear what the source of the alcohol was. There was information to suggest that the tortfeasor in that case brought his own beer to the party and consumed
his... Wasn't that the whole premise of that case, that it was unclear who brought it? As opposed
well,
to
yes, Your Honor, each of...
Wasn't that the whole premise of that case?
That's correct. What that court... I'm sorry, Your Honor. What the appellate division said was that the interpretation of the word provide does not mean that host A has to physically hand drink to person B or C. That if a host
who says, hey, I'm having a bring your own party here. Place your alcohol on the table. I've got some alcohol. You can bring your own. You can consume it here at my house. If that's the type of behavior under Dower versus Gamba, that violates the social host liability law. And I think this gets back to your question earlier, Justice. Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead. Now go ahead, finish.
I think this gets back to your question earlier, Justice Fernandez-Vina, as to whether or not the social host liability law in any way expanded on Kelly versus Gwinnell. In this way, it did. By the appellate division's interpretation of the word provide in the statute, 5.6b of that statute, the interpretation of the word provide, the Judge Chabelle in the appellate division rejected the notion that you can bring your own party and say, here, come here, I don't know where the alcohol is coming from, I'm not going to provide any of it, but drink it here. But that's a violation of the social host liability law. In the same way as...
That's different. The facts of this case, aren't they different? Because the parents did not allow it, did not provide it, did not purchase the alcohol. It was a son who had no control of the house, and they were not aware of it. So aren't the facts here different from the Gamba case?
Well, a couple of things about that, Justice Fernandez-Vina. I don't think that for the purposes of where we are here today, that it is very much different. The parents are out of this appeal as far as we're concerned. We raised that issue at the appellate division. The appellate division did strongly disagree with us about the duty that the parents have, and we haven't taken that issue up here. The only issue we're here for is that Mark Swinzerski, and think about what Mark Swinzerski did here. He accompanied Brandon Narleski and a few others to the liquor store. Mark Swinzerski said he went into the liquor store with Brandon Narleski because Brandon Narleski didn't want to be alone. He then says, hey, come back to my house. We can drink in my bedroom against his own mother's rules of the house. His mother at her deposition, and this is one of the reasons that the appellate division disagreed with us as to the mother's duty, because there was no evidence that the mother had any knowledge
If your clerk had checked his proof, we probably wouldn't be here today.
Most likely, that's correct, Justice Timpone, and we have never disputed that. It's my client's position. We've never said that we didn't do something wrong. In fact, there's a judgment against us, a very large monetary judgment against us. All we're saying is that when the court considers the parties who are at issue here, one of the individuals who is a culpable party is Mark Swinzerski. In the great wall of...
So I want to come back to understand the scope of the appellate division ruling as you understand it. Same hypo. You've got several 19-year-olds in a small room where everybody knows exactly what's going on. Has the one who lives there facilitated drinking by underage adults by observing his friends drink from the beer that person two has given to person three?
I think if the 19-year-old is there in the room, is participating to the extent that he's watching what's going on, he has his friends over for the purpose that they can consume this alcohol, then yes, that would be a facilitation because he's substantially assisting the type of conduct that's at issue. And I never got to finish my...
So what must happen in those circumstances? How is the duty to be enforced by the person who lives in the home?
The duty is to be enforced by him saying, guys, we're not drinking at my house here. And this is where we think the benefit of our rule and the rule that the appellate division enacted with the facilitations, not hinging it on direct service, has great effect. If the rule was that a minor is that someone over the age of 18 who makes alcohol available to one who's under the age of 21 has to directly serve the others in the home, then what's that individual going to say? He's going to say, sure, we can have it at my house, as long as I don't purchase the alcohol, as long as I don't serve anybody directly, hand drink A to person B, then that's fine. I can act with impunity.
So if we compare that with the social host law, if you had adults and somebody invites people over for dinner and one person says, brought my own wine and I'm going to sit here and drink it, food's great, but the wine's better, and that person goes out and kills somebody. That would not be within the social host law, would it?
I'm not sure that's quite right, Justice Patterson. Obviously, that's a different question than what we have here. But under Dower versus Gamba, if the social host observes the guest drinking the wine, and if there are signs of visible intoxication, then yes, there may very well be a duty on the social host in that case under that law, and again, under the interpretation of the word provide in Dower versus Gamba, in just the same way as this court held in Mazzucano, that in order for there to be a dram shop liability, self-service is service under the Dram Shop Act. That case, you know, involved the pig roast where people were going to the taps and serving themselves.
No, but that's different. That setting is there is an identifiable party who's providing the alcohol. Here, we're talking about a very significant expansion that even as applied to adults, if we're applied to adults, I would respectfully suggest would take us beyond what the legislature wanted to impose in terms of liability on adults. And that is... Well, There's no serving, there's no filling a glass, there's no handing it off, there's not even, the alcohol did not, in the hypothetical I gave you, did not originate with the person who owns the home. It's a pure, you're standing there and you didn't stop it. I don't see the social host liability, the social host statute as imposing on adults the obligation to stop people from drinking alcohol that was not served by the social host. Tell me why I'm wrong about that.
Two responses to that, Justice Patterson. The first is that if Your Honor may very well be right about that. If the court is right, it doesn't change our analysis here because we're dealing with those who are under the age of 21, minors in the law who are uniquely susceptible to the effects of consuming alcohol, to the point where this court has said that the treatment of minors under the age of 21 with alcohol is harsher than those intoxicated.
There is I'd suggest there's very little lack of clarity. There's very little really dispute as to the obligations of adults over 21 with respect to minors. But we're talking about here, you make the point that minors are to be protected. We're talking about both the defendant being a minor as well as the original plaintiff, in this case, the estate of a minor. So we're talking about imposing on a minor the obligation under civil law to take affirmative action to stop an activity that, unless I'm missing something about the social host liability, would not be imposed on an adult in a setting involving other adults. That is a significant leap, I would respectfully suggest.
Again, 2 points on that, Justice Patterson. If I could go back very quickly to Dower versus Gamba, I think that if that is in fact the case, all the characteristics of Your Honor's hypothetical were present in Dower versus Gamba. There was a common source of alcohol, but again, it wasn't really clear. There was evidence that alcohol had come from a bunch of different sources. The tortfeasor himself, the guy that got drunk, went out, drove a car, and injured two people who were under the age of 18. There was evidence that he brought his and consumed, I believe, his own beer.
But that's all adults, right? All adults in that setting.
Yes, Your Honor. I was trying to respond to your hypothetical about the person bringing the wine to the party and consuming.
Right.
It
okay. But all adults. We're talking about just if we compare the statute with the legislature's made some determinations as to what responsibilities to put on adult social hosts, and what I'm hearing from you is that there should be an obligation on an 18 to 20, not quite 21-year-old, to stop the activity and say, we're not doing this here, either get out of the house or let's just sit here and watch television and not drink. That's essentially what that is saying, is unless you take affirmative action to stop this activity, which is an illegal activity by all concerned, you are liable with your peers, not adult to child, not adult to minor, but with your peers. And that's a very significant change in the law, I would suggest to you.
I would respectfully just disagree, Justice Patterson, for a couple of reasons. One is because these individuals are adults under the law. And if you look at the text of the Disorderly Persons Statute, 2C33-17, who does that statute apply to? It applies to anyone not only to specifically limited dram shops, not just to those who are over the age of 21. The first word of the law is anyone. And what does the legislative history say? The legislature wants to discourage the consumption of alcohol by those non-minors under the age of 21 who otherwise may very well be adults in all other areas.
But, and then the legislature has limited it. That statute provides limited circumstances, which I don't think you are contending this case falls within. So yes, arguably the legislature's put some responsibilities on 18 to 21 year olds in that statute, but very circumscribed setting, which this does not apply to, as I read the facts here.
We're talking here about the disorderly person statute, and we have argued that conduct falls within the literal terms of that statute. That statute speaks to offering, serving, making available alcohol. Did Mark Spinzerski offer, serve, or make available alcohol to another in his home who was under the age of 21? I would respectfully say that colloquially, yes, he did. If nothing had happened in this case, no tragic result, no death of Brandon Narleski, and everybody had gotten together the next day and said to Nicholas Combs, hey, Nick, did Mark Spinzerski make alcohol available at his home to you? He would have said yes, and Nicholas Combs testified to this at his deposition. He didn't know where the alcohol came from. He got there a few hours after the time frame that we're dealing with here, Justice Patterson, is 6 p.m. to about 11 o'clock at night. 6 p.m. is when they bought the alcohol. 11 o'clock at night is when, 10:53 to be exact, is when the accident actually happened. Nicholas Combs didn't know where the alcohol came from. He didn't go with any of these individuals to the liquor store. All he did was show up at the house a few hours later, consume the alcohol in a cup that was provided by Mark Swinzerski at the home in a glass cup. And what we're saying is not that Mark Swinzerski, after the party has gotten going, that's far down the road. I suppose that, you know, once the party gets going, yeah, then they would have an obligation to say, guys, we can't be here. You know, we're all adults here. We can all drive. You guys got to go somewhere else. We can't be doing this activity here. What he should have said at the very outset is, We're not doing this here. We're not drinking at my home. Otherwise, I'm going to be subject to potential liability. The public policy of this state is to, one, with respect to underage drinking, is to, and we know this from Kelly, we know this from Rappaport and Lynn versus Rand, is to discourage strongly the consumption of alcohol by minors. And it's also to provide a potential source of recovery for those who are injured by the wrongful conduct.
And if I could pick up... Does Part B of the DP language assist your argument at all?
Well, we think it does in this way. I mean, you know, Justice Timpone, this gets to your question as to whether or not Mark Swinzerski offered, owned, leased, or managed the property. What we're saying is that Mark Swinzerski controlled the property. He lived there for 10 years. It wasn't just his bedroom. There's evidence that another one of his friends smoked marijuana on the premises that night. He fell asleep in the couch downstairs. He had a wide range of control over the entirety of the home there. And what we're saying is that when you look at this from a civil context, and even if the court were to disagree with our position that Mark Swinzerski violated the literal text of the DP statute, the DP statute is extremely instructive and extremely illustrative, both Section A and B. Section B is particularly instructive because it makes clear that you can have liability in these types of situations without direct service of the alcohol. And remember, again, this gets back to our argument in response to Amici's position that the legislature has somehow preempted this area of law. If that were the case, then why would the legislature not only pass the DP statute, but then 10 years later expand the scope of liability under that statute, add subsection B, and say, hey, not only can you not offer, serve, or make available alcohol to anybody in the home, but you also can't make your home available for the purpose that alcohol be consumed. You can't leave your home in the care of another for the
purpose... Are you arguing that the visible intoxication standard does not apply?
Well, I think it's
the standard that Judge Keith set forth in Thomas.
A couple things about Thomas. Thomas recognized two things. One is that Lynn versus Rand was the law of the land. It applied Lynn versus Rand, and it applied it accurately. The DP statute had been enacted a week after the conduct in question had taken place. And so I respectfully disagree with Mr. Macnaugh's position that it was a question of, well, they decided not to apply the DP statute in that case because they didn't think the scope fitted. The reason that Judge Keefe did not apply the DP statute in that case was because he did. There was no evidence that the legislature wanted the law to be retroactive to conduct that occurred before it was passed. What that statute did, as Judge Keefe recognized in his opinion, is it changed. He said it outright. I mean, the implication is clearly there. If the conduct in question had occurred when the DP statute was in effect, and if the DP statute was applied in that case, it would change the law in Lynn versus Rand to apply not only to those who were visibly intoxicated, but
okay,
all
so
to...
I'm trying to understand the scope of this piece of your argument. Your position is the service of any alcohol within the home will expose the social host to liability?
To one who's under the age of 21, that's correct. Now,
so
again...
How does I'm trying to understand how this would work when a minor has a 0.04 was not visibly intoxicated and then gets in an accident. Where is like the tie between the carelessness, the negligence, and the drinking? How is that going to work? Are you following me?
Well, yes, I am, Your Honor. If alcohol,
causation.
If there's evidence that anyone facilitated the consumption of alcohol in their residence by that person, what this court said in Rappaport still applies today. One drink is too many when it comes to a minor.
Okay,
minors,
so well,
you're arguing
strict
liability.
Yeah, right, precisely. Are you arguing if one drink is served and the person goes out and gets in an accident and is careless, the social host is strictly liable, as Justice Lovecchia just
That's
noted.
What I'm hearing.
No, that's not what we're arguing. And if I can try to clarify our position.
Please.
Here's a hypothetical, which I think it may seem a little bit, it's different, obviously, than what we have here, but I think it'll help elucidate our position. Suppose you had a situation where a 19-year-old is home from college for the summer. His parents are not home. The 19-year-old goes out to the movies for the afternoon. He comes back home and finds a dozen of his friends consuming alcohol on his back patio. The 19-year-old, he doesn't know that they're there. He didn't invite them there. He didn't offer alcohol to them. He didn't provide funds for them to obtain the alcohol. He says, guys, you can't be here. We're not allowed to do this at my house. You guys got to go. I'm going upstairs and I'm going to bed. That would be a situation in which the social host, the one who was at the house, might have known about the conduct, but he didn't do anything to facilitate the consumption of alcohol by anyone else who was there. And so in this case, what do we have? Mark Swinzerski knew what he was doing. He knew it was against the law of his house. I would respectfully submit he knew it was against
I understand
the
law that. So here's the question. Someone, will this change around the facts, has one beer in front of Mark. Okay.
Everyone
has one beer in the bedroom, goes out and gets involved in an accident. Are you arguing that the social host is strictly liable?
Well, I'm not sure that that would be strict liability. Let me just first say this, that in this case, the court may not...
He's careless. He goes out, he's careless, okay? So we have that. Under those circumstances, is your position that the social host is strictly liable?
Well, I'm not sure that strict liability is the appropriate term there, Your Honor, firstly. Secondly, I do think that in this case, the court obviously doesn't need to address that because there was more than one drink.
Address that hypothetical, because whatever we do is going to, okay, encompass.
I understand you don't want to use the word strict liability. Are you saying there was a violation of a common law duty when those three 19-year-olds were together and one beer was consumed?
The three 19-year-olds are together, and the one who is the social host of the party knows what is going on, and one person consumes an alcoholic beverage who's under the age of 21, yes, I think there is a violation of the common law duty. If that person who's under the age of 21 who drank the beer is pulled over, he would be guilty of a crime. Because
but,
people who
but
are
you
the
don't
age
require
of 21-
that anybody prove causation. That serving that beer was somehow the cause of the careless event that caused the injury. Isn't that the definition of strict liability?
No,
there doesn't have to be any causation between him consuming the beer and the accident.
Causation would be a question for the jury, as it would be in this case, Justice Solomon. The jury would be the one to determine foreseeability and causation. If the jury were to find that that consumption of the beer did not have any effect as to the accident in question, then there would be no liability. All we're saying is that someone has a duty not to facilitate consumption of any alcohol, and this is consistent with the appellate division's opinion, by one who's under the age of 21. I mean, in Steele versus Kerrigan, this court pointed out that providing minors, those who are legally incompetent to consume alcohol, is the equivalent of giving them gunpowder or a firearm. It's an extremely serious thing, and this is why the disorderly person statute certainly doesn't hinge on visible intoxication. To answer your question as to that statute, Justice Albin, if there was one drink, that person would be, I believe, a disorderly person. If somebody offered alcohol, one drink, to one who's under the age of 21, and that would be a violation of 2C33-17 sub A. When we're dealing with minors, I'm sorry.
We weren't talking about offer. I think that changes the hypothetical that we've been wrestling with. We weren't talking about the homeowner offering.
Right. I think that would fall under the making available. The statute also says encourage or enticing, that there doesn't need to be the formal person A serving drink to person B in order for there to be liability. Think about it from this perspective. If you had a situation in which there are three people consuming alcohol, host A serves alcohol directly to person B, but doesn't to person C at the home. Both B and C become intoxicated, C from a different source of alcohol. If C goes out and injures somebody, and B goes out and injures somebody, is the duty going to be, well, we're going to let B's injured party bring a claim against A, because A directly served B, but we're not going to allow C's injured party to bring a claim because there was no direct service. Both individuals became intoxicated at the same household, both of them within the same four walls, and we would respectfully submit that it doesn't make a difference where the alcohol came from. If the owner knew about this, the host knew about it and facilitated the conduct by not taking any action, and indeed participate. What Mark Swinzerski did here, he's participated in the conduct. He knew about it. He was there the entire time. He facilitated it by providing Nicholas Gomes with a cup out of which to consume it. If I can just make one last point about
Counsel, please make the last point. Can I ask a question, Chief? Real quick question.
Of course.
Counsel,
go ahead.
Your third party complaints for contribution and indemnification, correct?
Yes.
That common law indemnification?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that would require your negligence to be technical and passive in order to recover from the other party? All right.
That's right. I take Your Honor's point that may very well be out at this point. Contribution may be the only claim.
Yeah. Second question. Is the decedent here a guest, a social guest, if this were an adult?
Brandon Norleski, is he a social guest if it were an adult?
A social guest of Mark's house? Is he a social guest there?
I think he would classify as a social guest, yes.
If these were adults, would a claim by a social guest against the host be prohibited under the Social Host Liability Act or Kelly versus Gwinnell?
No, it would not. If it was over the age of 21.
Even if he was over the age of 21, it would be prohibited, would it not? Because it's
that Kelly versus Gwinnell and the statute was clear on
it
that.
It only applies to injuries to third parties. Not
the
social
statute is clear on that. Yes.
So yes. We would have to change that if we concluded it created a liability for minors here. Because
no,
if he were an adult, he would have no cause of action against Mark Swierski, right?
Well,
if they were adults, there would be no cause of action.
If that were the case,
then you would have no claim for contribution or indemnification because there would be no cause of action because your claim is derivative. Is that correct?
I don't think that is correct, because here what we have is Mark Swinzerski facilitated the consumption of alcohol by Nicholas Gomes in the household. Brandon Narleski is a victim of Nicholas Gomes' conduct. Your Honor may very well be right that if this was under the social host liability law, that there would be no claim because you're dealing here with the same party that consumed the alcohol may now be in the claim. But now we, as a dram shop, are bringing a claim that's not governed by the social host liability law that we contend is governed by the common law. And it's
right,
core.
But you're saying that that in that respect, as with the respect to the other issue that we talked about, that you're asking for broader liability to be imposed on an 18 to 21-year-old than the legislature has tolerated for adults.
No, we're asking for this. We're asking. No, that's incorrect, Justice Patterson. We're asking for the same standard of conduct to apply to all adults.
But in terms of if an adult were in the same circumstances Justice Fernandez-Vina was talking about, in the same circumstances, there would be at least a very strong argument that there could not be a claim here because the guest, there were a couple of guests involved here, but the individual who was unfortunately killed in this accident was a guest. So in that setting, his estate could not bring a claim against an adult host, and you're asking for the liability on a 18 to 21-year-old to be greater than the legislature imposed on adults.
Yeah, let me see if I can answer just Your Honor's question in this way. If there was someone who was over the age of, if Mark Swinzerski in this case was over the age of 21 and made his home available in the exact same way, I think there would still be liability. That would be something that is not governed by the social host liability law. The social host liability law only applies if everybody's, as Mr. Jacobson, I think, very eloquently pointed this out, that there has to be legal service of alcohol under the social host liability.
But if all these under 21-year-olds were over 21 and the same exact circumstances occurred under the social host statute, there could be no claim by this estate against Mark. Isn't that correct?
That, I think, is right, because the social host liability law is exclusive, and there would be no claim. But again, the social host liability law doesn't address this question. It explicitly leaves it out.
Isn't this hypothetical what occurred in Thomas? Am I mistaken? Thomas served two 17-year-olds. Weren't both intoxicated and one injured the other, or am I mistaken about that?
No, that is what occurred in Thomas, Justice Alvin. I think
that is the hypothetical that Justice Fernandez-Vina has basically raised. No, or
I think that's right. And the only thing that we're trying to say is whether or not someone is under the age, for the purposes of our rule, not the social host liability rule, whether or not someone's under or over the age of 21, liability would still apply. We're certainly not suggesting that a 19-year-old is somehow subject to a different duty than a 25-year-old. If a 25-year-old conducted himself in the way that Mark Swinzerski did, there would be liability here because he offered, served, or made available, in our view, he facilitated the consumption of alcohol by one who was under the age of 21.
Counsel, we're approaching 40 minutes. Is there anything you'd like to say to bring your argument to a conclusion?
No, Your Honor, I think that's it. Unless there are any further questions, which I'm happy to address. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, and I want to thank